The coronavirus has infected North Carolina from the mountains to the beaches and everywhere in between. And this hour, public radio stations from across the state are connecting with each other to provide a picture of how our communities are handling the outbreak. I'm Mike Collins from WFAE in Charlotte.
And I'm Frank Stacio at WUNC in Durham. Businesses have shuttered, schools have gone online, and stay-at-home orders are in force. But what precautions may be next? We'll hear what lawmakers in Raleigh are thinking.
I'm David Ford from WFDD in Winston-Salem. I'll be talking with healthcare providers on the front lines of the pandemic.
Summer is coming. Will the beaches be open? I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn at WHQR in Wilmington. We take a look.
And tourism is vital to the mountains, too. I'm Matt Bush from Blue Ridge Public Radio. We'll have an update on that.
And we get the latest from Governor Roy Cooper.
Coronavirus in North Carolina, the statewide impact of COVID-19. Coronavirus in North Carolina, the statewide impact of COVID-19. I'm Mike Collins from WFAE in Charlotte, and this hour, public radio stations across the state are joining to bring you the latest on the virus and on how various communities are handling the outbreak.
I'm Frank Stacio at WUNC in Durham. We'll look at how medical professionals on the front lines of COVID-19 are coping as they work to save lives.
Later, Frank talks with State Representative Craig Horn about what he sees as major changes coming to education and the state because of the virus.
We also hear about the economic impact on North Carolina's tourism industry. But first, Mike gets an update on where our state is right now in the progression of COVID-19 and some thoughts on when things might get back to something approaching normal in a conversation with Governor Roy Cooper.
Governor Cooper, last week's projection from the University of Washington had the number of coronavirus cases in North Carolina as peaking today. Do you know if that prediction has come true?
You know, we have continued to see a leveling out of cases, albeit a steady increase in them, but we've continued to see a leveling out. So that is a positive thing. Different models show different dates. We have pulled together a team of experts who's doing modeling for North Carolina, and they see a little later time, potentially in May or even later, when North Carolina may see a peak. The key here is to make sure we continue pushing on our stay-at-home order and on our social distancing in order to make sure that we don't overwhelm our hospitals, our hospital beds, our ICU units. You know, you could cause another peak if you lifted restrictions too soon, because
that was going to be my next question, because you've said many times that what we are doing is working. So how will we know when we have emerged from this and we can stop staying at home?
Well, we know that the stay-at-home orders over the long term are not sustainable. What we're going to do is to learn how to live in a new normal while restarting our economy. And we have formed a group of experts who are advising us, looking at the data, health experts advising us on the kinds of things we need to look at. We're consulting business leaders as to what they may need to protect their employees and their customers, but to try to get back into business. Obviously, our order runs out at the end of the month, so we're going to be needing to make decisions about where we go from here. We're putting together a plan about how North Carolina can ease restrictions, get more North Carolinians back to work, while at the same time trying to keep our hospitals from being overwhelmed. This virus is going to be with us until there's a vaccine. So we're probably talking for sure at least till the end of the year, maybe even longer, that we're going to be living with this. But what we have to do is to find the right way to protect people, to keep our hospitals from being overwhelmed, but also to get North Carolina back to work. When I've got 561,000 people in North Carolina who have filed for unemployment in 3 weeks, we know that represents a lot of families hanging by a thread. So we need to make certain that we keep the public safe, number one, but that we find the right formula for being able to get North Carolina back to work. It's really going to take compassion, and it's going to take commitment to defeat this virus. The commitment is to social distancing, and the compassion is what you're doing for your family and for other people to keep from spreading this virus.
Let's talk about all these unemployed people, because the system that North Carolina has set up to handle unemployment was not set up to handle this surge of all these people filing unemployment claims at the same time. And a lot of people had difficulty getting through online and on the phone. Has that been ironed out?
They are making significant progress, and I am pushing the secretary and the department to continue to make improvements, because every single claim is critical. It does represent a family that's struggling, and we need to get that money to them as soon as possible. But when you think about the scale here, you're talking about a system that had an average of about 3,000 claims a week. So for the last 3 weeks, a normal 3 weeks for them would have been 9,000 claims. Instead, the last 3 weeks have been 561,000 claims. So what has happened is that they've contracted with additional call centers. They have put more servers in. They are getting more people to be able to handle both calls and help people online. They've paid out about $66 million thus far. So they are making progress, but I'm not going to rest until the system is working as perfectly as possible and people are getting paid the amount they're supposed to get paid and getting paid as soon as possible.
We've heard a lot from governors around the country who have complained about not having enough access to personal protection equipment for healthcare workers on the front lines, not enough ventilators, of being put in a position to bid against each other, against other states, and even bidding against the federal government for these things. Earlier this month, you said North Carolina had received about 33% of what it requested from the federal government and were told not to expect any more supplies. Is that still the case?
That is still the case. We're still at about a third of what we had requested.
What is your reaction to that when the federal government says you're not getting anything else?
It's frustration. There should have been significant planning ahead of time, particularly in January and February, and trying to amass the kind of equipment that this country would need. And what's happening now is a rationing to states that are seeing the most acute number of cases and are seeing the most deaths. And North Carolina is not in that top level of states right now. That's good for us, because I think it shows clearly that our stay-at-home order and our restrictions are working, but that has put us behind in being able to obtain personal protective equipment from the federal government. So consequently, what we are doing is trying to get it on the open market. We are working with suppliers overseas. We are working with our own North Carolina manufacturers, who many of them have switched over from making clothing and furniture to personal protective equipment. You help getting North Carolina State to help them with certain aspects of this, and that's positive. But even in that situation, we have seen the federal government come in to demand some of that equipment from these North Carolina suppliers, which they have the right to do under federal law. So it is frustrating for us, but know that we are continuing to fight, scrap, and claw. I do believe that once it gets started, that we're going to see more and more of these supplies being produced right here in the United States, and we will catch up, because we know that this personal protective equipment is going to be needed for months and months into the future. We're going to need it for testing. We're going to need it to continue to treat people for everyday illnesses, and we have a good team over there that's trying to get everything they can get a hold of, talking to people at 11 o'clock at night about some connection in China to try to get personal protective equipment here. That kind of thing is happening, and we've had some limited success, and we're going to keep working until we get what we need.
Prior to the pandemic and prior to the shutdown, North Carolina was doing extremely well economically, and now the state, I'm told, is anticipating a revenue loss of between $1.5 and $2.5 billion, with a B, billion dollars. What will that mean, not just for the state of North Carolina, but for the citizens of North Carolina?
Well, I'm concerned about the health of people. It would have been good if we had expanded Medicaid and had been able to have 500,000 to 600,000 more North Carolinians having insurance at this critical time. But I hope that we learn things from this crisis that put a spotlight on issues that were there before. Yes, the economy was going well, but we still had a lot of rural areas without high-speed internet access. We had concerns with over a million people not having access to health insurance. And when you have this kind of crisis, those problems become amplified. So what we need to do is to learn from this. I believe that we can get our economy working again. I do believe that if we can get money into the economy through the stimulus checks, through unemployment payment, to loans and grants to small businesses so that they can hang on and we can get to the point where we are living at a new normal, we can bring the economy back. North Carolina has a constitutional requirement for a balanced budget, so we're going to have to figure out how we can balance the budget. We do have a situation where we were in the middle of a budget dispute wherein I had vetoed the budget and they had not been able to override the veto. There were a lot of things in that budget that I think would have been bad for our state, like more corporate tax cuts, like money going to private school vouchers, money going to some pork barrel projects that now seem that we now know we don't need. We probably didn't need them before, but that money is still there, and that's a positive thing, and will help us balance the budget. And I believe that we can bounce back from this. I believe in the people of our state. I believe we will be able to find a way to protect North Carolinians and get the economy going again. And we're going to work on it every single day until we do.
Governor Roy Cooper, thank you very much for the time this morning.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot.
When we come back, how North Carolina healthcare professionals are dealing with the COVID-19 pandemic as coronavirus in North Carolina, the statewide impact of COVID-19 continues.
You're listening to Coronavirus in North Carolina, the statewide impact of COVID-19, a cooperative project of public radio stations across the Tar Heel State. I'm Mike Collins at WFAE in Charlotte.
And I'm Frank Stacio at WUNC in Durham. The impact of the virus is being felt in every corner of the state and in every economic sector.
Later in the hour, we take you to the mountains and the beaches for a report on how those communities are dealing with this outbreak. Summer is fast approaching. What will this pandemic mean for tourism and to those who earn their living catering to visitors?
North Carolina Secretary of Health and Human Services Mandy Cohen has been guiding the public health response to the outbreak. We get her assessment of the progression of the disease and more coming up in just a few minutes.
But first, healthcare workers are on the front lines of the effort to save lives in this pandemic. But in addition to their being doctors and nurses, they are also parents, sons and daughters, friends and colleagues. They share their stories of what it's like battling this insidious disease, what keeps them up at night, and what gives them hope for the future in this report from David Ford at WFDD in Winston-Salem.
Back in March, the pandemic began hitting early hotspot communities like Seattle. City officials there scrambled to set up temporary quarantine housing and to stockpile the medical equipment and supplies needed to contain the spread. Weeks later, health professionals in the Piedmont were still bracing for a major outbreak here.
When a hurricane comes ashore, we don't really know if it's going to be a Category 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5.
That's Wake Forest Baptist Health infectious disease expert Christopher Ohl.
We're kind of in the same situation. Is our hurricane's a little bit later than the hurricanes in other places. And so we've had time to do something that we don't get to do with hurricanes.
And that is prepare. Today, doctors and nurses at major triad area hospitals are feeling increasingly confident that the extra preparation time is paying off. Dr. Michael Morgan is an infectious disease specialist for Novant Health. He and his colleagues see all the COVID-positive patients that enter the hospital.
We all have proper PPE. I feel very comfortable taking care of those patients and being in those units. Right now, we have a 30-bed ICU, just a COVID unit. We're getting ready to go to 60 beds, and I think we're able to go up to over 200, and we have the ventilators to support that.
Getting there has taken a lot of groundwork, contingency planning, adapting to new COVID patient protocols. Cone Health Chief Nurse Vianne Antrim says at times it's been overwhelming.
I could say for the last 4 weeks, it's been 12 to 14 hour days every day. You know, weekends have been a thing of the past, so a lot of us haven't had uninterrupted time, you know, to spend with our families and things like that. And everybody knows what's at stake.
You plan for these events, but there's no planning for what we're in right now.
That's Michael Byengine with Novant Health. He's in charge of making sure the hospitals have what they need, calling places across the globe to secure supplies, and forging local networks as well.
We've changed the whole entire structure of our team that where we have one part of our team is just making sure things get to where they need to be, and the other team is calling anybody and everybody that may have available supply to help the clinicians out. We're on the phone and moving pretty quickly to try and make sure we're keeping up with demand, and that's the global problem right now is demand is exceeding supply. So everyone's trying to fight for the same pool of opportunity.
Byengine says it's the thought of running out, not being able to maintain supply levels 2 to 3 weeks ahead of the expected surge of COVID patients that keeps him up at night. And he's not alone. Healthcare providers across the triad are losing sleep.
I mean, it worries me that we're going to miss people who have other illnesses, not reaching out for help because they're afraid of becoming sick with the virus.
What wakes me up in a sweat is, you know, that this peak may be higher than we're expecting.
What keeps me awake is just what toll the grief is that we're all going through and will continue to go through. Many people are facing the deepest fears that they've ever had. That's a heavy weight for us all to carry for one another.
We heard from doctors Ashley Parrott of Novant Health, Jeff Hatcher of Cone Health, and Cone Health chaplain Patricia Wright. Each of them were quick to point out room for hope, too. Community members donating food, small local manufacturers retooling their shops to produce much-needed hand sanitizer and gowns, hospital colleagues going above and beyond nonstop every day. Wake Forest Baptist Health's Mary Claire O'Brien practices emergency medicine. She says she's inspired by what she sees outside of the hospital as well.
I have confidence in the American people, the people who perform our city services and the fire rescue and the law enforcement and the postal workers and the folks in the grocery store who are packaging and delivering our food. You know, I think everybody wants to buckle down and do their part.
And now there's an outward sign of hope. Standing atop the medical center where O'Brien works is a brightly lit 31-foot-tall Moravian star. It's usually on display during the holidays. It's out again now, and people across the triad are hanging their own stars from their porches in solidarity. Program Director of Faith Health Clinical Ministries, Keith Steierwalt, calls it an extraordinary sign in an extraordinary time.
That star is a symbol of hope and love, but it's also a symbol of a promise of reconciliation and peace that reminds us of our perseverance in this time that, you know, might otherwise seem so dark.
Wake Forest Baptist Star will remain in place, brightly lit and on display, until Winston-Salem's stay-at-home order is eventually lifted. For WFDD News, I'm David Ford.
Pandemics require a robust public health response in order to minimize the spread of disease, coordinate healthcare efforts, and keep the public informed. During the coronavirus pandemic in North Carolina, that job has fallen to Secretary of the State's Department of Health and Human Services, Dr. Mandy Cohen. She joins WFAE's Mike Collins.
Dr. Cohen, the governor has said that social distancing is working and that lives are being saved. And it does appear that North Carolina will experience far fewer deaths than we feared. But you have said this does not mean that people won't get sick, and it does not mean that they won't need hospital care. How many people in the state are in the hospital right now with COVID-19?
Well, first, Mike, thanks for having me and thanks for sharing information about staying at home. You are right. Staying at home is saving lives. We have certainly seen a slowing of the rate of acceleration of spread based on lab cases here. So that is good news. We have about 350 people who are hospitalized right now and over 100 deaths. And every one of those lives is a family that has lost a loved one, friends that have lost a loved one. And so we're doing everything that we can to slow the spread of this virus and make sure that our medical system is going to be there for folks who need it. So we want to make sure that too many people don't get sick at the same time. Again, slowing the spread so that if you do get sick and you do need medical care, it's there for you when you need it.
The University of Washington has been making predictions about the number of cases here and around the country, and they've predicted that North Carolina will reach the peak of coronavirus cases this week. Have we reached the peak, in your opinion?
Yes, thanks for that, because, you know, we all want precise information in this time of uncertainty. I want it, certainly, as we look to try to plan for the future. But models are unfortunately only as good as the data and the assumptions that you can put into this. And it is a rapidly evolving situation. We're learning more about the virus every day, how it's transmitted to what kinds of populations. The models, there's a number of them out there, and unfortunately, they're not crystal balls, but they can give us some sense of how to plan. That's why we're trying to look at a number of models, not just one exclusively. But as we come upon the supposed peak from one of those models, I think what we can tell now is that we are not at our peak, meaning that we are still seeing an upward trend of cases. But what we can see is that that rate of acceleration has slowed. And that's a good thing. So the social distancing and the staying at home, it's working. But in terms of peak, and do I think that the numbers are going to go back down? I do not. We have a pretty good window on how to predict the next 7 days. That doesn't give us a ton of information, but we've gotten pretty good at being able to see ahead 7 days. And that tells us we're still going up, but luckily the up is slower than we've seen in the past.
Well, this is where it gets confusing, because we keep hearing that we have flattened the curve, and I keep looking at the graph, and the graph looks like a rocket ship. It just keeps going up and up and up and up and up. It looks pretty steep to a layperson. You're a doctor, so how would you describe where we are on this so-called curve?
Well, you are right. We are going up, but I would not say steep. I would say that we have definitely flattened the curve. So what I look at when I look at those numbers is something called a doubling time. So what is the time it took for us to go from 50 cases to 100, or from 100 cases to 200, or now that we're in thousands, from 1,000 cases to 2,000? And what I would say is that the doubling time is lengthening. And that's a good thing. That's what you want to see, is to start to lengthen out on the time it takes to double our amount of cases. So while it may have taken 4 days to go from 100 to 200, it's taking maybe 10 days to go from 1,000 to 2,000. Don't hold me to those numbers, but that's sure. The general concept is, are we slowing the doubling time? And the answer is yes, which tells me we are flattening the curve. Staying home is working, but we cannot get complacent. This is not the time to back off. To your point, we have not peaked, and we do not think we will this week. The question is how do we look at our numbers and understand where we are and what does that mean for the future? I don't think we have all the answers as we sit here in the middle of April. I think what we know is social distancing is working, stay at home is working, but we're not out of the woods yet.
Is one of the reasons we don't have the answers because we're not doing enough testing? The president keeps saying we're doing a lot of testing, we're conducting more tests than anybody in the rest of the world, and yet some governors have complained about not having enough tests. Are we testing enough? Can we test? Do we have the tests?
So we are certainly testing more and more people day over day than we were able to at the beginning of the outbreak. And so that is a good thing. We are seeing our private lab capacity really improve, and they're having better throughput, meaning that they're getting the test results back to us much quicker. So that is great. We actually are standing up a testing surge work group because we know testing does need to continue to accelerate and to expand. And so we know that that is not something that the state does alone. That is something we want to do in coordination with all of our private lab partners, our hospital lab partners, our pharmacy labs, and our clinical sites. So that's something we want to do in coordination across North Carolina, because you are absolutely right. The testing will continue to be an important component of knowing how the virus is spreading across North Carolina. So that will continue to be a focus for us.
I asked the governor this earlier, but I'll ask you too. Are North Carolina hospitals able to provide healthcare workers with these masks and other personal protection equipment that we're hearing so much about in the news? Do our hospitals have enough? Do they have enough ventilators for this outbreak? Mm-hmm.
Yes, that has obviously been a headline in the news for many, many weeks. Supply chains are really, really strained all over the place. That is not unique to North Carolina or the United States, but everyone is sort of needing those same masks and gowns and protective equipment all at the same time, and manufacturing is racing to catch up. So we do not feel like we have everything we need in terms of supplies here in North Carolina, and that's part of the reason why we need to continue to be aggressive at staying at home, because we don't yet have the supplies to handle if we would have a surge of cases all of a sudden. We would need more protective equipment than we feel we have right now. Now it's getting better. I think with every passing day, the supply chains improve a little bit. We have new manufacturers come online who are making gowns and masks and such. And I will tell you, our team has been working night and day to literally scour the earth to try to bring protective equipment here. But unfortunately, a competition. States are competing, hospitals are competing. So we're doing the best we can, but it sort of dovetails to why stay at home is so important, because we want the health system to be there for everyone who needs it, but we also need to be protecting our healthcare workers. And I'll just tell you, frankly, today we are not where we want to be, which is why we continue to focus on slowing the spread and ramping up our medical surge capacity, as well as this protective equipment. We'll get there. Like I said, I think things are starting to improve, but we have a ways to go.
So when we stay at home and follow the directives, what we're doing is not only lowering the curve, we're protecting our healthcare workers, because fewer cases present at the hospital level as a result of that. But people have been staying at home for a while now, and they're going to be staying at home for a while longer. They might be getting a little antsy. And here's a key question. Mm-hmm. How much longer will we have to do this?
Yeah, I know that's the key question everyone wants the answer to. I can't say that right now, sitting here in the middle of April. We need to continue to watch where our case counts go. We need to make sure, like I said, we're getting the protective equipment. And then we have to talk with a lot of scientists. We need to talk with our public health experts. We need to talk with our business community. So we have to take in a lot of inputs to make that decision. And that's something I don't think sitting in the middle of April we can say with precision. But what I would say, that the better we do in April staying home, the better I feel that we are going to be able to do in terms of reopening in the month of May. So if we do well now in terms of abiding by the stay at home, really practicing our social distancing, really trying to drive down our numbers and our spread here in North Carolina in April, I think that's going to set us up for more success in terms of our ability to start to reopen in May. But I cannot promise a day. We have to look at the numbers, and we are just too far away. While I'm able to see to the future about 7 days, I don't have the ability to see a lot further than that. So we'll just have to see as we go here.
There are people who are hoping that when this ends, we can go back to normal. But then there are other people who are saying we're not going back to normal until we have a vaccine. So the question, I guess, becomes, given all the unknowns about this virus and the lack of a vaccine and how extremely contagious this virus is, even when businesses reopen, do you think people will be willing to go to a theater or to a restaurant and sit in crowds among strangers? Do you think they would be wise to do that? Mm-hmm. Or should we exercise caution even in June and July and August and going forward?
Well, I think COVID-19 has shaken our state, our country, our world in a way that is going to change it fundamentally going forward. And what I would say, that you are right in saying that we can't go back to normal. We will go back to something that I'm calling our new normal, but it's going to have additional precautions baked into it that involve social distancing and hand washing and wiping down surfaces, doing a lot of the infection control that maybe we didn't think about and wasn't top of mind previously, as we try to slowly and appropriately reopen and get back to slightly back towards our normal, but we'll have new practices. So I'm calling it our new normal, because there will need to be things that we'll be doing differently, because you're right, we have no vaccine yet. The vaccine's at least a year away. So this virus is going to be with us here in North Carolina until we have that vaccine, until we have medicines that we feel can treat it. So we have some time here to really have the virus in our communities, and we're going to need to protect each other.
Are health professionals such as yourself working on strategies so that you can give us a list of guidelines when we start going back on how we should act in the world?
100%. So we've been putting out guidance since the very beginning of this pandemic, helping folks understand what they should do. That guidance changes at different points in the epidemic. When we first were giving guidance, there were certain things we asked folks to do. We evolved that as we saw the virus change here in North Carolina, and now we're at stay at home. And I think there will be different phases to our response. And so do stay tuned to our team. We will be giving additional guidance as we move through this. We'll never be getting away from the tried and true things of hand washing your hands and making sure you have a good respiratory etiquette, meaning, you know, sneezing into your elbow, washing your hands, wiping down surfaces, and those kinds of things.
This has really impacted the urban areas of North Carolina because of the density of our cities, obviously, but the rural areas we are told around the country are going to face this as well. Are rural areas in North Carolina prepared? Do hospitals and healthcare professionals have what they need? Will they be able to get what they need? What's your opinion on where they are in this situation right now?
It's a good point that in rural communities, just by the amount of people in them and the space between people, as they bump into people less, which means less opportunities to spread the virus. However, we know those communities have less medical resources. And so what we've been trying to do is plan for increased capacity across our whole state. And that means thinking about all of the ways in which we can maximize what we have. That means for us, protecting our rural providers, right? They are also ones that are seeing less patients come through their doors right now. So they're having some financial difficulty. So we've worked to make sure that we can get some additional payments out to folks and hardship payments and ability to make sure that we don't lose the rural health infrastructure that we have, but we certainly want to do better. I'll go back to bring up the fact that I think our state is weaker in our response to COVID-19 because we have not expanded Medicaid, meaning we have a higher uninsured rate here in North Carolina than nearly all other states in the country. 37, 38 other states have expanded Medicaid, meaning more people have insurance coverage in those states. And again, puts us at a disadvantage in terms of having folks have had access to care, work on preventative measures, getting their diabetes under control, getting their blood pressure under control, so that if they do get COVID-19, that they're going to be in the best position to fight it off.
Dr. Mandy Cohen, Secretary of the North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services, thank you so much for the time today.
Well, thanks, Mike, for having me, and thanks to everyone who is staying home to save lives.
Coming up, the influence of the virus on education and tourism when coronavirus in North Carolina, the statewide impact of COVID-19, continues. You're listening to Coronavirus in North Carolina, the statewide impact of COVID-19. It's a joint project of public radio stations throughout the state. I'm Frank Stacio at WUNC in Durham.
And I'm Mike Collins at WFAE in Charlotte. Tourism could be profoundly disrupted by this pandemic. Tourism is an economic engine for mountain and beach communities where already some events have been canceled or postponed. Coming up, we hear from both areas about how the outbreak is raising anxiety among those who cater to tourists.
Students around the state gleefully await a snow day now and then, a brief respite from the normal and a time to enjoy staying home. But as classrooms remain closed for weeks in the midst of the COVID-19 pandemic, the new normal seems anything but. Some kids are itching to get back to their routines. Teachers are being asked to make Herculean shifts in online learning, and many parents are just trying to hang on. So how is North Carolina doing when it comes to keeping our kids on track academically? And what will all of this mean for the future of learning in our state? Joining me now with his thoughts, State Representative Craig Horn. Greg Horn is a Republican representing Union County, also co-chairs a House Working Group on Education and COVID-19. Representative Horn, so good of you to talk with us.
Well, thank you very much for offering this opportunity to share my thoughts.
Well, certainly on the top of everybody's mind, right now, schools scheduled to reopen May 18th. How likely is that to happen?
Well, I'm not optimistic, I'm sorry to say, although I do believe we will begin to relax some of the very strident quarantine orders within the next few weeks. I don't think we're going to see schools open that early. I hope they do, because the learning loss is just incredible and does not bode well for the immediate future.
All right. Well, and what happens if they don't? Do they give us a sense of what that means if they're not open by May 18th?
Well, it means that we're going to have to get a lot better at delivering remote education. A lot better. And there are many pieces and parts to that, none the least of which is we need to get a whole lot more kids connected to their schools through the use of the digital environment. That's a challenge. We've got a lot of blank spots around this state. Fortunately, most of the heavily urbanized areas do have connectivity, but the kids that need it the most in our poor rural areas, they don't have connectivity. And that is obviously a huge loss for them.
Do you have any sense of how it's going in those places? Obviously, you talked about some of the disparity. Any sense of, you know, what's really happening and what might have to be made up or might have to be remedied in the coming school year as a result?
These teachers that we have in North Carolina are just incredible. They are being unbelievably creative, joining with bus drivers and cafeteria workers and teaching assistants and local community organizations to deliver schoolwork directly to children that need it, that don't have connectivity, that are kind of out there on their own. Also working with kids that don't have parents at home because some of those parents work in healthcare or other necessary industries. So a lot of creative things are happening, but unfortunately, there's still thousands of kids going without an educational opportunity during this period.
A lot of it's happening at home. I wonder if you or any members of the committee have come up with, heard about, and can share any tips for parents who are trying to become teachers in all of this.
There are a number of things going on. Certainly, a lot of it depends on connectivity to the internet. As I said earlier, the teachers are being amazingly creative. Our Teacher of the Year, Mariah Morris, is leading a Herculean effort of a group of former Teachers of the Year and current teachers to deliver online, productive online education every day with a new lesson or several new lessons. We also know that UNCTV has joined with some of our schools of education and with the Board of Education to develop and deliver educational programming that is above and beyond what they normally would deliver on UNCTV. So a lot of efforts being made. Of course, are the private sector, the people that provide internet service, many of them are stepping up, providing free internet service while this COVID issue continues. But of course, providing free internet service does not overcome the fact that there may not be connectivity in those areas or in many of our areas. So it's a challenge every single day. We're learning a lot every day. We're getting better at it every day. We're learning how to deliver a remote education that is actually meaningful, not just busy work. So I'm really pretty optimistic. The superintendent of Vance Schools coined the phrase COVID opportunity. In every challenge, there is opportunity to learn and get better. And I think we are doing a great job of that in North Carolina.
Well, I wonder if any of your thinking has been reshaped already about some of them. For instance, we talk about parents and other caregivers at home. Has this reshaped any of your thinking about the role of families in education?
Well, I've always felt very strongly about the importance of family engagement in education. And the data has certainly borne that out. The challenge has been, how do we teach our families to be teachers? For some, it probably comes a little more natural than for others. But we also have to recognize that we've got thousands of kids in single-parent households or being cared for by grandma or grandpa or perhaps a neighbor that don't have quite the investment in that kids as a parent would have, or are just physically or emotionally not capable providing that support. So we're going to see the face of education change in North Carolina as a result of this. We're going to see schools become more invested with the parents themselves or the caregivers and providing them some more guidance, more training on how to deal with distance education. This will benefit North Carolina children greatly. We're, of course, going to continue to have snow days and hurricane days, but we'll, I think, be much better prepared as we go forward, as we learn and adapt to a brave new world.
Well, you talked about a number of changes here. What do you think is going to be the state's role, and how will that change going forward?
Well, the state has a key role in connectivity. And now we have to get into the what's called the last mile, that last bit of connectivity. As you may know, here in North Carolina, we are particularly blessed to be the presently the only state in the union where every classroom has wireless broadband access. Every classroom in every LEA in our state. We were the first. We are still the only. We can, in my opinion, also connect every home. Every home has electricity. Every home has telephone. Every home gets television. So every home can get connectivity. We're going to grapple with the challenge of making connectivity a utility. That's a major change for North Carolina. The state has got a huge financial interest in that, a responsibility, both from the standpoint of the money itself as well as regulatory standpoints. So it's the state will play a major role in the delivery of a quality education to every student going forward.
I'm talking with State Representative Craig Horn of Union County, a Republican who co-chairs a House Committee on Education and COVID-19. Representative Horn, thanks so much for talking with us.
Thanks very much. Appreciate it. You all stay safe. Stay home.
One in seven jobs in Buncombe County, home to the city of Asheville, is related to the tourism industry. COVID-19 has shuttered the breweries, restaurants, and outdoor recreation spots that make Western North Carolina an international destination. Blue Ridge Public Radio's Matt Bush reports there is a lot of anxiety in the mountains, not just about the pandemic's effect on tourism, but also around those still traveling to the region.
This was a common conversation last month at restaurants across Western North Carolina. Doug Elliott is the owner of the Sweet Onion in Waynesville.
We told them that we're going to have to close for an indefinite amount of time and that there's no longer employment here for them, unfortunately. And that, you know, I guess they have to go down and file for unemployment if they can or do what they can do.
Rosetta Starr of Rosetta's Kitchen in Asheville said they had no choice but to close immediately if they wanted to one day reopen.
We made that choice because we were already hemorrhaging financially so fast that it felt like the safest way to keep any cash reserves and pay the things that we already owed while also getting our staff some, hopefully, security through unemployment.
The short-term impact of the closures on the local economy was swift. Kit Kramer of the Asheville Area Chamber of Commerce spoke at a press conference March 27th.
In the first week alone, it's estimated that over 10,000 of our citizens lost their employment, and the layoffs continue.
But the long-term impact is unclear and really won't be known until there's a definitive end to the social distancing that forced the closures and layoffs. Despite the pandemic, there were still plenty of travelers to the region, though that wasn't necessarily welcome. The first confirmed cases of COVID-19 in Western North Carolina, in Buncombe and Cherokee counties, were out-of-state residents from New York that traveled here. The counties in the far western part of the state are popular places to own a second home, and in the opening days of the pandemic, small towns across the area saw many of those second homeowners arriving to ride out the pandemic in a rural setting. Kelly Marr of Whittier voiced a common concern.
Every case that's been around us has been from a different state. It's like we're standing at our exit, opening arms, saying, like, welcome, Corona.
Marr pushed her native Swain County to follow neighboring Graham County in putting travel restrictions on out-of-state residents. The Quala boundary, home to the eastern band of Cherokee Indians, put in heavy travel restrictions, too. A curfew is now in effect in Swain County, but no ban on out-of-state visitors. If an out-of-state or part-time resident does show up, they must self-isolate for 14 days and are urged to bring enough food and supplies for that time frame so they don't have to go out. Ben Bushyhead is the chair of the Swain County Board of Commissioners.
The main thing that people need to know is that the air in the mountains is not the secret panacea to avoid the coronavirus.
The town of Highlands in Macon County took it a step further. It's situated on a plateau in the mountains in the Nantahala National Forest and has a permanent population of around 1,000 people. That doubles when the second homeowners come every year, mostly from Atlanta. That started earlier than usual because of the pandemic this year. Highlands had police checkpoints stopping everyone on the lone road going into town. Patrick Taylor is the mayor.
People will think that they're escaping the virus by coming up to this isolated community, but we're really not that isolated from this situation.
Police at those checkpoints tell Highlands part-time residents they must self-isolate for 14 days, a common refrain for anyone now traveling to Western North Carolina. For the BPR News Team, I'm Matt Bush.
If the stay-at-home orders last into the summer, businesses like Britt's Donuts on the Carolina Beach Boardwalk in New Hanover County will have to stay shuttered. In Brunswick County, Southport has canceled its summer market and concert series and the official North Carolina 4th of July festival, which draws tens of thousands of tourists. Rachel Lewis Hilburn of WHQR explores what the summer tourist season means to the Cape Fear region.
The menu at Britt's is simple. Donuts, glazed only, served with coffee, milk, or soda. And it's cash only at the register. Bobby Nivens and his wife Maxine have owned and run the business since 1974.
Well, I hope that we'll be open sometime at least by the middle of May. I'm not sure, but we just, no idea. We just have to wait and see what happens if we reach that peak they're talking about.
Nivens says he respects the restrictions, but he has cabin fever and he's out of his personal donut stash. He eats one a day and he's 81 years old. But most importantly, he says his seasonal employees who come back each year are basically family. If the lines return to Britt's Donuts, and there are almost always lines, he'll work to keep the customers safe.
We're going to try to get them to stay 6 foot apart. If that line starts forming out there, we'll try to get them to stay 6 foot apart.
Sean Cook owns Pleasure Island Rentals, a beach equipment company in Carolina Beach. He also owns Shuck and Shack, a local seafood restaurant. And like Bobby Nivens, he worries about his employees.
We've had employees with us for over 10 years, and so having to tell them that, they don't have a job, they don't have a job to come to, has been pretty heartbreaking. We've dealt with that to some degree with hurricanes, but, there's a light at the end of that tunnel.
Kim Huffam is president and CEO of New Hanover County's Tourism and Development Authority. She says shutting down the area right on the cusp of what was set to be a strong spring and summer season is devastating. And tourism is critical to the local economy. For perspective, she offers the latest economic impact figures available from 2018. That's the same year as Hurricane Florence.
Over $612 million that was brought into our community from outside as far as visiting tourists. So, that's over $500 million that was contributed as a result of tourism.
County officials say sales tax distributions fueled by tourism represent about 22% of annual revenue, and they won't know until late May how much of a blow COVID-19 will be. But they do expect to fall far short of the projected $7 million monthly influx. Tourism employs almost 6,500 people in New Hanover County alone, and the majority of those employees work for small businesses.
The small restaurants, so they're full during the tourist season, aren't really that full during the off-season.
That's Craig Blazinski, mayor of Curie Beach, a small town of about 2,200 year-round residents. It shares Pleasure Island with Carolina Beach and Fort Fisher. The town has about 7 motels, he says, but most of the businesses are restaurants and markets.
I am mostly concerned about them. They employ local people. They employ our teenagers. They provide things for us to do and stay local.
Some restaurants, as is true across the country, are trying to maximize their takeout and delivery business. Sean Cook says his seafood restaurant is doing a good takeout business, but he's not sure staying open is worth it.
Let's just say you had 6 restaurants on the island that delivered, 2 months ago before all this started, which typically would be your pizza places. I mean, now you got like 20 restaurants trying to do it, and that's great. And I hope everybody can put a few dollars in the bank account, but in the grand scheme of things, Absolutely not. It's not profitable.
Bobby Nivens of Brits Donuts says even if he could do a walk-up window business, he will not open until it's safe to allow customers inside and bring all of his employees back.
Yeah, you can't get out. They don't want you to get out. I don't want my employees taking a chance on something like that either.
Officials in New Hanover County's budget office say they're being conservative as they develop the budget for the next fiscal year. They say they're confident that they won't have to cut services, and county staff won't recommend a tax increase to make up the shortfall, given the hardship local citizens are facing. For Bobby Nivens, a few weeks of delay opening the donut shop might mean he stays open later, past Labor Day, to compensate. But if they can't open this summer at all, they'll be back in time for the 2021 season, he says. For sure.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, we'll be back.
When the pandemic has finally passed, what does Sean Cook think Pleasure Island will look like?
It's going to be one hell of a party for a couple weeks. I think everybody, for the most part, is going to survive.
For WHQR News in coastal North Carolina, I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn.
Coronavirus in North Carolina, the statewide impact of COVID-19, was produced by WFAE in Charlotte.
With help from WUNC in Durham, WFDD in Winston-Salem, WHQR in Wilmington, and Blue Ridge Public Radio in Asheville. I'm Frank Stachow.
And I'm Mike Collins. Thanks for listening and stay safe.